We are now beginning recording and streaming for the new GTLD pre-delegation testing process review meeting.
Good morning. If everyone could find seats and we can get started in a minute or so here. Please come forward to the table if you plan on speaking, asking questions. Try and make it as intimate a session as we can. Okay, so we'll go ahead and get started. This session is about pre-delegation testing and a new acronym we've coined, PDT. I'm Russ Weinstein. I'm the ICANN Panel Coordination Manager, responsible for pre-delegation testing. I'm on Christine Ouellette's new GTLD operations team, and I've brought a team here with me to help present pre-delegation testing, and I'll have everyone introduce themselves. Maybe we can start with Frederick.
Sure. I'm Fredrik Ljunggren from Kirei, and we assist ICANN in developing the requirements for the PDT, all based on the applicant guidebook, of course.
I'm Jacob Schlüter of Kirei, working together with Fredrik, assisting ICANN.
Francisco Arias, ICANN technical staff, and what is someone called a subject matter expert for this pre-delegation testing.
I'm Matt Stoffberg of DataSE. DataSE is the PDT service provider.
And my name is Danny Arts from DataSE.
And I'm Christine Ouellette from ICANN.
Great. And the goal of this session is to give applicants more information about pre-delegation testing, to help them prepare for pre-delegation testing. Thank everyone for coming. We hope the session's beneficial to everyone. So to walk you through the agenda we have here, I'm going to give a intro, an overview of pre-delegation testing, introduce the process. We know we haven't revealed that much about the process of pre-delegation testing before, so this is a little bit of an unveiling of that. And then Jacob and Frederick will take us through some of the technical aspects of how to prepare for a successful pre-delegation testing experience. Matt's from the service provider will provide some lessons learned from the pre-delegation testing pilot. For those of you who don't know, we recently conducted and concluded a PDT pilot, and we'd consider it a success. We learned a great deal, and so we wanted to share what transpired in the pilot, what we learned from it, and what we're doing to make the production even more beneficial and successful for the applicants. After that point, we'll take some time for a Q&A. After a lot of content's presented, we'll do some Q&A, and then if there's time, we'll get back into a little bit of a tutorial on pre-delegation testing in terms of, we'll give you some preview of what the system looks like that you'll be interacting with, and Matt's will take you through that, and I'll wrap up with some resources and information that are available to you now and what will be coming forth in the coming days. So with that, wanted to kind of give everyone perspective on where we're at when we talk about pre-delegation testing. When you enter pre-delegation testing, that means you've passed evaluation, be it initial evaluation or extended evaluation. You've signed a registry agreement with ICANN, and now you're ready for pre-delegation testing. Assuming your system is production ready, your infrastructure is all production ready, and my friends here at Kirei will tell you more about what production ready systems mean in their section. What is pre-delegation testing? It's a verification step. It's to ensure the registry system is ready for production delegation into the root zone. It's partially a manual review of documentation as well as system testing to ensure the systems are working as expected. And there's the five key elements, DNS, who is, EBP, data escrow, and if applicable, IDN. What we wanted to convey here on this slide is that the applicant's systems will be tested from all of the nodes And we've published where the IP addresses from each of those nodes are published in the FAQ document that's available on the PDT microsite in the resources section. So you need to prepare your system to accept traffic from those nodes. So I want to talk about the process a little bit here. Like I mentioned, we haven't talked much about the process up until this point. So first, there'll be preparation activities. Once you've completed a registry agreement with ICANN, you'll get notification that you're now ready to enter into pre-delegation testing, and you can set up a test appointment with ICANN, and you can identify a pre-delegation point of contact, both with ICANN through our CRM tool. We recognize that most of the primary contacts may not be the right person to lead your application through pre-delegation testing. So we wanted to create a delegate, so to speak, that someone who's comfortable and familiar with the registry systems and registry services and the technical infrastructure of your registry, so they can lead you through pre-delegation testing successfully. You'll then, once you have a test appointment established, you'll be able to submit the input data required into the system, into the pre-delegation system. That needs to be completed before the testing appointment. The testing appointment is expected to be 2 weeks, two-week span, but we created a process where you can extend that by a week to allow for any errors to be remedied. We really want to make sure that small things can be corrected in that 2 week window or in that 3 week window to allow for more applicants to succeed at pre-delegation testing. We didn't want to be failing applicants for minor problems with the system or with the connectivity and things. So we created a process where if remedy needs to occur, there's a time slot in there for remedy to occur. And then ICANN will deliver the results to the primary contact of the applicant. And we expect that to take roughly 2 to 3 weeks. We're working to get it as tight as we can, but roughly 2 to 3 weeks after the conclusion of your testing window. So like I mentioned, there may be situations where there's information that needs remedy before all the testing can be completed. So we've created a process, follow-up questions. And these questions will come to the pre-delegation testing contact through the tool, in the messaging tool in the pre-delegation testing system. Primarily, we're seeing two types of questions. There'll be questions about the input data, issues with it being complete or fully accurate, and those are slated to be issued by the end of the first week. And then there may be connectivity or minor protocol type questions that are occurring while the automated tests are trying to be performed, and those need to be resolved within the testing window. So to help you guys prepare, you need to have somewhat of standby support. It doesn't need to be 24-hour by any means, but be able to respond to these questions as quickly as possible to facilitate successful testing. I'll then pass it over to Jacob and Frederick. I think Frederick was going to kick it off.
Thank you, Russ. First slide, please. Thanks. So production ready, what that actually mean is that we're going to perform the pre-delegation testing on the actual production system. So the PDT is actually a quite comprehensive set of tests. All the tests are published at the PDT microsite, so that you can download them. You can check out exactly what each test is about and the expected outcome of it. So we would really recommend you to take a close look at that and prepare for those tests. So check again. Test yourself, and you will pass PDT smoothly. Next slide, please. So the PDT provider requires a set of data from you. It's basically two parts. The one part is technical parameters for performing technical, partly automated tests for DNS, EPP, and WHIS. The other set of data is the self-certification documentation which you need to prepare. For this, there are templates available, and you will also find that at microsite. And there are also examples there which you can use for making sure that the information is complete.
So the parameters you are supposed to submit are first the technical parameters, and we've chosen to communicate that using XML. And this is mainly because the parameters are usually created by someone maybe not submitting the parameters themselves. It could be DNS IP addresses, it could be EPP commands with EPP extensions, it could be Whois server parameters and such. So those are provided as XML, and the schemas are available on the microsite as well. We urge you to verify all data and verify compliance with the schemas before you submit it. The provider will check the schemas, but verify it again anyway to be able to submit them smoothly. We have the IDN tables. A part of the application, the IDN tables were submitted usually as PDF. For the PDT, we would like you to submit the IDN tables in machine-readable format, preferably the RFC 4290 or 3743. There are cases where those may not be applicable. In such case, you could use another text-based format and provide some documentation how to parse that format, and we will be happy to try to do that for you. But if you can, please use the standard format. Other documentation, such as the self-certification, the DNSSEC practice statements, and such, as PDF only. Next. So for name servers, we're checking everything according to DGB. Before the test, we recommend that you check connectivity thoroughly, make sure that all name servers respond to both IPv4 and IPv6, UDP and TCP. There is, of course, multiple tools available on the net for doing pre-delegation for DNS in particular. We recommend the DNS check by DNSSEC ISSE tool, which has a pre-delegation check, which is check an undelegated domain, and you enter the IP address of at least one name server, will do the check. It is basically the tool. It's not the only tool, but it's one of the tools used by the PDT provider. So if you pass that, you are in pretty good shape before. Also check the IANA technical requirements. We'll check those as part of the PDT, and it will be checked as well when you proceed to the actual delegation by IANA. And to get that, just pass smoothly, you can check it. And they are downloadable. I think there is a link on the microsite, but it's also from the IANA website. Next. Yeah. We are waiting for the slide. Thank you. So for DNS, we have a requirement in the ADB for PDT to test all Anycast nodes or locations. And they must be declared, and they will be tested. They will be tested for protocol compliance and zone propagation delay. We will not test any performance-related parameters, such as latency or query rate or such things, due to how the Anycast network works. The ADB actually requires the individual IP addresses of the instances. We have expanded this and offered an opportunity to use query by proxy. We recently published a documentation how that works, basically a setup where you could relay or your questions for your Anycast locations through your management network or what have you, and do possibly rate limitation. And then forward them to the Anycast nodes if you seem fit. We have seen both setups in the pilot. We have applicants who have chosen to use direct queries and proxy, and both seems to work just fine. So I recommend you should read that document if you have any, or contact us if you have any concerns. The listed locations of Anycast nodes will be cross-referenced with the application. So make sure that the application is up to date or have a change request made. So we'll basically, the PDT project will check that it does not different. So you can report, you can have 150 Anycast locations in your application and then report 5 for PDT. That will not be any good. Next slide, please. For Whois, we look at reachability. You should verify that whois.nic.tld responds to Whois, to HTTP, port 80, and optionally port 403, both IPv4 and IPv6. One should note that the host name, whois.nic.tld, is required by the specifications, and also that nic.tld must be delegated from the zone. You cannot have an A record for whois.nic.tld in the zone itself. It's not allowed by the AGB. Next. One forward. Stop. Thanks. So, also check the new GTLD agreement specification 4 for data formats. Use standard keywords where applicable. Check formats of dates and phone numbers. Don't forget the legal disclaimer. Also, if you have claimed and asserted that you will provide searchable Whois in your application, you've got extra scoring for that during IE, and we will check that you actually provide it and that it works as required. It's good to provide some sort of link to the searchable Whois from the main Whois site, so the PDT provider are able to find it. We've seen examples of that in pilot. Yes, next slide. For EPP, of course, verify that the PDT service provider are allowed to connect to the EPP server. This may sound very basic, but we've seen cases where this is not the case. In the XML schemas where you describe how one should create hosts and domains, make sure you have to have all the required extensions declared. The schema is used to communicate exactly what's sent as part of the create commands, so we need to check that. Some applicants have backends that require manual confirmation on create, domain create or contact create. If you have that, either you could whitelist the objects that will be created as part of the PDT, or you could just respond promptly during the weeks of testing. Whitelisting is, of course, preferred if possible. That there are scenarios where that may not be possible. Next. So for IDN, as I mentioned before, the IDN tables as part of question 44 in the application are to be provided as machine parsable. You could verify, if you have the IDN tables in these two standard RFC formats, you could verify them before submitting them. They will not be automatically verified when you submit it. There is a link here to a simple script that may be used to verify the tables. Check that you are not have like disallowed copoints in your tables. That will not fly. And other things. So basically sanity checks of IDM tables, of course. So next slide, please.
Right. Back to the self-certification documentation. Among other things that should go into this is compliance with the SLA, which is specification 10 of the agreement, and also it is required to have made a load test of different parts of the system, which includes both EPP and DNS. So we recognize that these tests may be disruptive for systems that is already in use, but it's still supposed to be production systems which these tests are going to be performed in. So of course it will be best to take, if it's a DNS test for instance in an end-cost cloud, you would take one node out of service and perform the test on that one, provided that that node is representative of the whole cloud, of course, and make sure you have something there. Also we recognize that some of these systems are completely new and it's quite hard to have a large track record, and in those cases you have to do as the best you can, especially now in the beginning. Next slide, please.
About the DPS, so you most applicants have sent in a DPS, which now in this version, which is sent again, should be the very version that is in place for production, and this time it also has to conform to RFC 6841, which basically means it has to follow that outline, and the information should go into the right places, basically. The most important and most notable parts of this is that you clearly describe the signing scheme in use for the zone, the critical controls for key management. And please also don't forget to outline the publication mechanism for the DS record in the zone, or possibly DS records. Also part of the PDT is a data escrow deposit sample, which should be sent, signed and encrypted to the PDT provider. That key is available on the microsite and also in the PDT system. Those files are used for verifying the data escrow format, basically. And please check the AGB for the requirements there. There is also an optional test, which will be performed of the data escrow agent service, which is a complete release. The release will be checked against the test, which has been made possibly just a few days before, basically making sure that everything is in there and it seems to work. So what you need to do is to ensure that your data escrow agent is ready, and you are actually also depositing data to that one. There will be no separate key exchange for that. They will be using the ICANN key for the decryption of that.
Thank you very much for coming here. I want to share some experience of the pilot test that we performed. Okay. Next slide, please. First of all, we want to thank all the applicants and backend providers that participated in the pilot. Your participation was very valuable for us. The most important outcome of the pilot was the confirmation that the system and routines that we have constructed for the PDT tests actually work. But of course there are some things that we can see that we can improve. Next slide, please. We see that we can have better instructions, or even better instructions. We can improve clarity and details, where we see that that the participants in the pilot have not fully understood the instructions. We can improve the templates with more explanations. We can have more examples of filled in data with increased variation. We can have more how-tos of how to test the system, so you can test your system yourself. And we also see an more need of communication between the applicants or the backend providers and the PDT service provider, and therefore we will provide more service hours, support hours, when we are available to answer emails and messages in communication with you. Next slide. There are also some observations of what we see that you can do. You can ensure that the PDT system or the PDT service provider gets all the required credentials for logging into the EPP system. Also ensure that your systems and firewalls are open for all the PDT test nodes. As you saw on a previous slide, there are five test nodes that we use. we use all five, so meaning that not just one of the five to a certain system, but all five. So we go from all five of them. Check that your EPP system really is a fully EPP compliant system. When you fill the documents templates in, keep all the headers in the template. That makes things better and easier. And then finally, that we have created an FAQ and where you can find a lot of information on how to improve things.
Okay, and getting back to what Matt's was talking about relative to the documentation that we're going to be that we can update, we are actively updating it right now. We're working to get it published on or before April 17th, mid next week, so that we can help the applicants all prepare. We recognize things weren't as clear as we wanted them to be, and we're trying to make that as best we can so that the testing goes smoothly. I think now we can open up for some question and answer time related to the material we presented. I saw a hand go up over here first.
Okay, I'm going to, Russ, I'll attempt to keep a queue. I see Amadeo, Anthony, Jeff.
And does it work? Yes, thanks. So you get the first question from a lawyer, so be patient. Because I just want to check something to see whether we have understood that. Two basic questions. One is about changes regarding the application. The other one is about the scroll. Let's start with this one. For the scroll, you want to... I have not completely understood whether you want to just receive the deposit and check that, or you want to check that in the provider itself. And the other question, I guess, is more for Christine. We need to provide the agreement with the scroll provider. It has to satisfy the criteria in the somehow certification program that ICANN has started. But this is somehow out of our control. Is ICANN and the scroll provider, how we will know before the test, and we have number 6 and 9 in the draw, which means first week for us, how will we know? Is that really, is ICANN already have passed some of these providers so we are sure that this is... what happens to the applicant if the problem arises with the scroll applicant and the scroll provider and ICANN are still stuck there? And the other question regarding the changes. Our applications are more than 1 year old because we completed that before April 12th. And, for instance, we described some hardware for the quiz, right? Some of this hardware might be obsolete by now. We have replaced. I guess that this is not a real problem. That there's a different model for the hardware. But what about, for instance, DNS? We added, for instance, new server and server locations. Do you want to test the ones that were in the application or what we have now that may have evolved a little bit?
Thank you, Amadeo. I will attempt to answer both questions, and then I'll let the technical team add to that. In terms of data escrow providers, I acknowledge we do not have any approved data escrow providers based on the criteria we published and the applications we published about a month ago. We do have, we are in receipt of at least one application I'm aware of. We need to come up with a provision on what we will do to support additional data escrow providers between now and later this month, as hopefully we'll have some applicants going through pre-delegation testing. So I acknowledge that we are working to have more data escrow providers approved through the application process, but until we do have some approved providers, we need to make some other statement of what data escrow providers will be accepted through the pre-delegation testing. That's item number one. In terms of changes to the application and the infrastructure, the guidebook calls and specifies that changes to any part of the application which is no longer accurate should be made through a change request. So it's very important that a change request, if the infrastructure has changed, that a change request be submitted and that it would be incorporated into the application. If as you said, you already have applications which have successfully passed initial evaluation. As I mentioned on Monday, change requests in that situation would be considered and looked at the time of contracting, and the application would be amended. That content and that content change would be assessed during the contracting phase. That would be important that we get that change so that the changes to the infrastructure can be passed along to the pre-delegation testing vendor.
Sorry, Christine, but for instance, in the case that we have a new thing on top of what we had, we will not be submitting the change request, which is an exaggeration, and we will just submit what we have. Now, on the, you know, the concrete model of the concrete brand of the server, do you understand that correctly, that you consider that also something that should go through the change request?
The model of the server is I don't believe, needed in part of the application. I'll let you gentlemen respond to this in a minute.
Okay.
So, yes, if the application no longer represents your operational plans, the guidebook says that you need to submit a change request. So we would expect to receive that change request. Jordan, did you have a comment on this particular data escrow?
No, I mean, issue? It's on this later point about system configurations relative to the application.
Okay, let me put you in the queue.
Sure.
I'll go to Anthony next.
Christine, do you want me to answer the question about the data escrow, the technical test?
Yes, please.
So, Amadeo, this is Francisco. The data escrow is, in fact, two tests. One is about the format of the deposit, and the other is about the testing the basically the escrow agent being able to release a deposit according to the SLA that is defined in the base agreement.
Anthony.
Thank you very much. I have two questions. One is as a completely non-technical person, but I think it may represent a question that other people might be confused about, so I'll ask it. Can you give me any kind of definition of what you mean by searchable who is? What does that include? That is something that we have not actually discovered a definition for. So clearly you can search by a domain name. Do you mean partial matches? Do you mean Soundex matches, et cetera?
This is Francisco. So I recognize that searchable quiz is not a term of art that you can easily define. However, if you go to specification 4 of the base agreement, specifically section 1.9, you have a definition of what are the fields that should be searchable. Certainly, there is no intention to offer sound-like partial match. That's certainly not the intention. But that describes the fields that should be searchable and what the results are expected to be.
Okay. My second question is for Christine. I think I sensed it in Amadeo's silence, which is, of course, completely unusual, that if you are asking everyone to make lots and lots and lots and lots, and that is what you're asking, of changes to their application, you're going to be flooded. That's one thing. The second thing is that if indeed you have passed initial evaluation and then you have the changes and that will be dealt with in contracting, are you actually setting up a secondary review of the application, a secondary evaluation of the application? Does this mean that you might then fail the application prior to contracting? Could you address that, please? Thank you.
So I think, thank you for the question, Anthony. I think this is a complex issue. It's the applications have been published for some time, and we're aware that plans, operational plans, may have changed in the last 9 months and going ahead. The guidebook is quite clear that changes to the plans, when the application no longer represents the operational plans, that change requests are expected to be submitted. I believe we've already received over 600 change requests, which are beyond what we expected, and I am not looking forward to a flood of additional change requests. The guidebook is also clear in that a change request could be determined to require reevaluation or evaluation in a future round. If we're talking about server configuration that does not substantially or materially change the operation of the registry, then I wouldn't expect it to require reevaluation. Clearly, ICANN staff are not doing any evaluation work. All of that is outsourced. I realize and recognize that these change requests are challenging for us in terms of how we process them. But my caution here is that if what I'm hearing is that your application, as currently submitted and published, no longer represents what you intend to operate, then there's a problem. And I'm not quite sure how we close that gap. So we can continue to have a sidebar on change requests. How about if we come back to change requests at the end and let's go through the technical material and content, but I'm happy to entertain a conversation about change requests separately. Jeff, you were next.
Yeah, well, my first comment was on change requests. Sorry. I think Christine, I think you will need to go back and consider the ramifications of what you're asking for. Nobody here is talking about substantially changing their application. You know, you change an IP address here or there, you add servers in different locations, you know, you do whatever. That's not change request materials. You don't want that. We're not going to do it. And frankly, we're not going to wait 8-10 weeks for you guys to evaluate that or even process it. It takes a long time to get our change request through, as you know. And that's, you don't do that after the fact. Like, once your registry is up and running, there is, you do not have to go through any process to actually change a server out or do any of that stuff. So I would strongly advise that if someone passes the application, and signs and goes to contract, unless it substantially changes what they do, there should be no change request filed. But my other comment before that was on the self-certification, just for everyone's knowledge. I mean, you kind of went through it fairly quickly, but I don't think people here realize that it's like a book. It's not like a simple piece of paper that you check off yes, 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 sign your name. This is actually quite substantial. There are a lot of narrative questions, like, I'll give you an example. Please describe, I think it was up there. Please describe how you mitigate denial of service attacks, distributed denial of service attacks, and provide a narrative description of all of your controls. And so these are, it is... no mistake about it, it's a book. It's a lot of description. And frankly, one of the concerns, so we were a pilot participant. Sorry, my name is Jeff Newman with Newstar. We were a pilot participant. We did not do everything in the pilot because, frankly, the amount of time offered was not nearly, and you guys realize this, was not nearly enough time once the specifications and things came out to actually go through all of it. But the self-certification is just, it's really a nightmare. There should be some way, instead of re-asking the same questions that are already answered in the guidebook or that are already answered, unless there is a change, really shouldn't have to re-answer the same question and do a cut and paste into every single self-certification. So I don't know if there's any way that you can go back and somehow either provide those answers directly to the provider and not have us fill it out again. But, I mean, it really does cause it's a lot of work as for the ones that have gone through it. And then my last comment is on the pilot itself. I'm glad that you all thought it was a success, and I'm glad it helped you. As a participant, it didn't help us one bit. I mean, at all. We got access to some of the documents, but we've got zero feedback from anybody on what happened. And I think that since you did select all of the providers, or at least a representative of all of the providers in your test, that we would really like the feedback on how we did, what we did, what we did wrong, what we did right. Because I think normally a beta or a pilot program usually works in two directions. There's usually an incentive for both parties to participate. And I'm not blaming the provider at all in this. I think this is I view this more as an ICANN issue, because ICANN always has a fear of providing information. It was the same way with the clarifying questions. So if you guys can respond to that, we'd love some feedback.
Sure.
Not publicly, though. You don't have to tell everyone else.
Sure, Jeff. Thanks for your questions. I can take the question related to PDT pilot feedback. We're getting that on the Adobe chat as well. So we do intend to communicate back to the participants some feedback regarding their participation. It won't be a complete all-inclusive report that you would get as if you were in PDT production, but we do intend to provide some feedback in the coming week or so. We just got data reports from the provider and need to sort through them and understand them a little more so we can get information back to you guys. But it's a good, fair comment, and we recognize it and definitely want to provide feedback so you can have successful testing.
And I also want to acknowledge your point on the substantial amount of information. We'll discuss that as well. So in the queue, there is someone at the microphone. Then I've got Jordan. I've got Rubens. We've got people on the Adobe. And then I'm so sorry. Thank you. Go right ahead.
This is Sophia von Kennett. There are two questions I'd like to ask you. First is also about the change request. I want to know what exactly do you mean the material changes? There's any specification that there are some changes will change the evaluation. Do we need to do a re-evaluation based on those changes? Can you list it? What specific requirement for those items? And also, I'd like to know the timelines for the change request. And if we submit change request now, and when will we get a response what to do the next? And also, second question would be for the on-site audit, how to prepare for the on-site audit? And what are the testing items for that? And because according to the self-certification document, according to the AGB, and all the on-site audit items will be listed in the self-certification documents. But there's any additional audits that would be done, and if you can expand that, it would be good.
So in terms of change requests, I would refer to the guidebook about the language regarding the types of changes necessary to the application that would require a change request. I agree. I think we need to provide a little more clarity on IP addresses, etc. But I am not prepared. What I need to say clearly is that if your application no longer represents your operational plans, then you should expect to submit a change request to process that. Depending on the types of change requests, we're processing some requests within a week. Others do take 4, 6, 8 weeks, depending on the volume and the queue, as well as the level of review that is required internally. So that's the timing on the change requests, and then I'll let the team address the technical issue, the technical question.
Sure. Francisco here. So regarding the on-site audits, I should say that we don't expect this to be a common case. We expect to do on-site audits only on exceptional cases where we see something that is, not quite clear after several interactions with the provider, and it doesn't look good, let's say. It's difficult to publish a specification of what it entails, because it really depends on the case-by-case basis, depending on what's the issue at hand. So I don't think we plan to publish a detailed specification of what the on-site audit will entail. but of course we will follow what the applicant guidebook says regarding the on-site audit.
One other thing I might be able to add to that. I think if we determine that an on-site audit is necessary for that application, we would prepare that applicant for what is of concern and why we think an audit is necessary.
Would that be also addressed in a pilot result as you communicate to the pilot applicant?
Correct, yeah. I don't think we saw anything in the pilot that would trigger an on-site audit. Is that what your question was?
Yeah, that's okay. That's my question. Okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you, Sophia. Next, I have Jordan.
So, a sort of concern and a question. I think I'm worried about the way we're dealing with application information relative to the testing or this evaluation process in an opposite way that almost everyone else is. I don't think our application materials provide the level of specificity that folks here seem to be talking about. I know that in some cases they passed initial evaluation, so they're good enough. certainly things like server platforms, specific IP addresses, and so on aren't specified in the application on purpose, precisely so we don't have to submit change requests all the time. Is there any comment on what you guys will do when the application isn't specific as what you seem to be looking for when comparing application materials to implementation?
The information needed for the PDT is the parameters that we accept as part of the input. We don't actually need more technical parameters to do the PDT. The documentation review is to check the application and the submitted material. So we don't anticipate that we need any more information. We've read quite an amount of applications and I don't see the need for I don't think the information I think you are saying, if you could clarify a bit more. But
I don't know yet. I mean, we'll see when we go through the process.
We haven't seen anything missing in the pilot and in the
I suspect our applications don't look very much like the applications you've seen in the pilot.
We can take that afterwards.
Okay, sure. Second question then is with regards to, I'm just trying to understand the load testing on the DNS. Are you saying if we say we have some sort of Anycast constellation with, say, I don't know, 500 servers or something like that, that when we say that we're load testing it, we test one of them, and then we multiply by 500 and we say that's the capacity of the constellation?
Yes.
Thank you, Jordan. Rubens, I had in the queue. Then we're going to go to the Adobe Connect room. Go ahead.
Rubens Q, nick.br. I have two questions. One, the first probably better targets to Francisco. What about trademark clearinghouse testing for the delegation? I haven't seen it, so where is it, or there is none?
So that's easy. There is none. However, having said that,
no problem.
For pre-delegation testing, as has been mentioned before in other sessions, and there is tomorrow a session specifically on trademark clearinghouse, there is a plan to offer a test bed so registries and registrars can interact with the clearinghouse and prepare their systems before they go live. I don't have the details available right now, but if you go to the session tomorrow, you will see that.
Okay. Second question is to .se folks. Is it possible to provide pre-delegation testing, not just the load, excluding the load test, but can the functionality tests be self-performed by the applicant, not using a book telling how to test, but seeing an actual test interface, especially for the EPP interface? because you have DNS check for DNS check, but it would be nice to test the EPP interface for compliance ourselves before scheduling the PDT test. Is it that possible?
In one of my slides, I refer to how-tos and describing how to test your EPP system yourself is part of that. And
it's more than how-to. It's the actual test tool.
Right now, I cannot promise that we can make that available, but because there are so many interdependencies. But we will try to provide tools to make it possible to test the EPP system yourself on beforehand. But we will look into the problem.
Okay.
Thank you for mentioning.
And then we have the queue, Wendy.
I have two questions from the queue. The first one is from Andrew Sullivan. I still don't completely understand why more support hours are needed to support testees. That sounds like the test is not well enough defined, which seems consistent with what others are saying. Can someone say more about this?
Sometimes there are simple questions coming from applicants that we could, by just a short answer, help the applicant. And by having extended hours, we could cover the hours of other people. We work in different time zones. So instead of waiting one day to the next business day for the answer, that answer could come the same business day. That's the reason why we need extended support hours.
Next question from initials XJF. Is the performance test for the EPP and who is system involved in PDT? Pre-delegation testing, sorry.
Well, it's part of the self-certification documentation, but the PDT provider will not perform those tests.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question?
Elmar Knipp from Tango Registry Systems. I have three questions. First, for the selected pre-delegation test operator SE, the requirement was that the software which you will develop is open source, which I found a brilliant idea. So that is open and transparent in the ICANN way. Where can we download the software that we can do the and first an own test and then go to you and say, hey, test us. Is there a link where we can download the open source software?
The requirements is for that any software used and developed specifically for the PDT could be made open source. And the intention has been to make it available, but there is no requirement to make it open source before PDT.
I thought it's a must. It's not a may.
If it's software developed specifically for it, should we can go back to the specifications, but I wrote them, so I think. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. In other words, it's not available for us.
Not at this time.
Okay.
We're looking into it, and
this would help you too, because you have less work with our test, so it's in both favors. Next question is, if an applicant has special EPP extensions which are needed for the operation, will you test this too?
Yeah, that is part of the EPP test. And you specify in the data the extensions.
Okay, it's already documented, and you will test all extensions which we mentioned in our applications.
Yes, okay. As far as I know.
I could add to that. All the extensions needed for normal operations. So if you require an extension for domain create, for example, it must be specified in the material. If you have optional extensions that you must not use or may not. You don't have to use it. And of course, we are not going to test it.
What is normal operation? Is a sunrise normal operation or not?
No.
No, okay. Last question. That is a question. I'm not sure whether I understand it. The escrow provider is not tested, you mentioned that is optional that you request the data from the escrow provider. Who decides whether you want to test it or not? Is it my own decision?
So, Elmar, just to be clear, so you're talking about the release?
Yes, the release. That's
okay.
Exactly my
yes,
question.
It will be ICANN's decision when to test it.
So you flip a coin and say, here we will test it, and... No, it's a real question, sorry.
Yes. For sure, I can tell you, every time we see a new escrow agent, we will do a data escrow test release.
Okay. And fourth question, if there is a configuration mistake, for example, the EPP credentials, there is a typo on our side, there's a possibility to repeat the test and it's not failed and you are out of the game.
Correct. That's why we created that possibility to extend the session by a week so that those things could be remedied within the test window. You'll get notification and if we find them and questions will be asked and you'll have the opportunity to remedy the test.
Okay, perfect.
Great, thank you. I had Anthony back in the queue. Anyone else? Rubens? Okay.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. First, interested to hear about the book from Jeff. Will these materials be made public?
Which materials?
The narrative questions that Jeff had to labor on, for instance, in the pre-delegation testing, the self-certification.
So, go ahead.
Are you talking about what is expected, or are you talking about the responses provided by the applicant?
The responses.
Okay. I don't think we intended to make those public. No.
Okay. Secondly, this was something that had been spoken about by a number of people. I don't know if there was a determination. Pardon me if there has been and I've missed it. But where you have a number of applications using exactly the same back end, are you still planning to test those individually or test them once or test them a couple of times? Can you explain that, please?
Just like initial evaluation, every application will go through the full process. So every application will be tested individually. You can use the same point of contact, and that point of contact can have existing credentials in the system that allow them to manage multiple applications at a time. Does that help?
Slightly. If there are substantial questions to be answered in a narrative fashion, as Jeff suggested, is this going to be done through a TAS-like interface, such that we need to have, like, numbers of people waiting for the system to update a long time, or do we send you a PDF? I mean, how is this managed?
The self-certification. So I think if there's questions on the self-certification, we could reopen that data entry area where the data could be resubmitted. In just a few minutes, actually, we'll take you through some screenshots demo, so that's a good segue for us, so you can get a little bit of look and feel of what the system looks like.
Thank you.
We're going to have Rubens, then we'll have Sophia, and then we will pause and go through the rest of the system demonstration.
Rubens Cube, following up on Elmar's comment, I just want to remark that there are not only EPP extensions that need to be considered during EPP testing. There are also some semantics that some applicants might have used. This is our case. We have a specific semantic applied for contact ID. So I wonder if the test isn't too automated to skip such an interpretation of data and trying to put anything that is synthetically valid in a field that there is testing for semantic value. That just a remark.
Thank you. And Sophia?
Yeah, my last question is, if we change our data escrow providers, which is different from what we stated in the applications, would that be a change request? Or would that also lead to a re-evaluation?
So I think we, as I mentioned, since we don't have any approved data escrow providers currently, anything would require a change. So the intention would not require reevaluation. We want to make sure, the point is that by the time we contract and operationally, that the registry operator is using an approved data escrow provider. Correct? So,
just one sec. Mm-hmm. And also because in the pilot test that requires a submission of the data escrow contract, and also in the real test next it would be a real contract required. But right now the data escrow agreement I believe is not finalized yet, and how we're going to provide that.
So every data escrow AIN is going to provide a template of the agreement, and we're going to validate that template. So if you use the template of the data escrow agent that has been approved by ICANN, for sure that agreement is going to be valid during PDT. If you change the agreement significantly, then it's possible that that agreement doesn't comply with what ICANN needs.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so we will segue and continue with the system walkthrough.
Thank you. This part is targeted at those who will use the PDT system, but of course others can get a picture of what the requirements are for data submission. So next slide, please. So we have set up a specific web-based system for the applicants or backend providers to provide data and communicating with the PDT service provider. So each contact has a login or gets a login when it's time for the PDT test. And here is a screenshot of the login page. You provide email and password, and you will get information in beforehand how to get your password. So next slide, please. So when you have logged in, you will meet the first page, which looked like this. I'm sorry if they're not very sharp. In the bottom, you can see that there are the actual applications for this contact, and you can see that this contact has two applications. One in the bottom, it says done. That means an application which has already gone through the entire PDT process. But when you, the first time, meet this, there will be applications in the top with the ready for submission. If you can raise the green arrow, who controls that there. So here is one application ready for submission, but of course there could be multiple. So then in the bottom it says list applications as a link below the done. If you can move the arrow there. Yeah. So if we click that, we come to the next slide, please. Here again, the applications are listed with more details. In the top, ongoing applications, there is one which has the status ready for submission. Okay. If we then click on the view link, we get to the next slide. And here we see one application and which is ready for submission, which means ready for data submission, which is the first step in the PDT process. On the right side, we see the six elements of data that is required for submission. So there are six data sets: data escrow data, DNS data, documentation, EPP data, IDN data, and Whois data. So all you have to go to all six elements and submit data. And I will show DNS as an example. And then on the to the right of incomplete, there's a view link. We click that link and come to the next. Yeah, and come to the next one. So here we can upload files or file or files, depending on the element. For DNS, just one file is required. For other elements, there are more files required. In the bottom of this page, you can see examples and also XML schema. For DNS, it's an XML file that is required. Okay, we choose a file, and then we do an upload. And if we go to the next slide, this is what happens if you choose wrong type of file. So if you upload something else, a PDF file instead of an XML file, or if you upload an XML file that does not match the XML schema, you get an error. So these are some basic scans that are performed. So to avoid basic mistakes. So next slide. This is a successful uploading of file. So we can see that a file has been uploaded. You can download the file and look at it. You can delete the file if you find that this is the wrong file. And that is, of course, good to do to verify that it's the right file. And when you have concluded this is the right file for DNS, you click on Submit Data. Next slide, please. There is a verification, because when you click Submit File, you cannot change your mind. So this is the end. I mean, then you have submitted the DNS data. Before you submit, you can change file if you find that it's wrong. Okay, but we have verified here, so we click on Submit. And next slide, please. Now the DNS XML file is submitted. You can still view it, but you cannot change it. Okay. So on the next slide, we can see the elements again. And now you can see that DNS has changed from red to green. DNS data is submitted. And what you are expected now to do is to submit data for the other five elements, which I will not show here, but it's the same procedure as with a DNS file. Next slide. When the submission period has ended, I mean, you get 1 week to submit data. When that period ends, the PDT service provider will pick up the application and put it into review. And then the status will be changed to review. And you can see that we have picked up the data and begun to review the data. And when we start actual testing, you can see that the status changes to testing. So in this way, you can follow what's happening with your application. We have talked a lot about the data that is needed to be uploaded and submitted, and we cannot perform the PDT test without these files. So next slide. We have also talked about communication. Within the same tool, you can send messages and questions to us, and we can reply to you, and we can also send questions to you. And you can read and write through this tool. When there is a message, a new message for you, you will get a notification through email, through the contact email. There will be an updated user manual for this PDT system for you to look at with the screenshots.
Okay, and then I wanted to thank you, Mats, for taking us through that. Hopefully that was helpful to everybody. I wanted to just highlight some resources we have available now and that, like I mentioned earlier, we'll be updating in the coming week and a half or so here, a week, I guess, now, till next April 17th is our target date for all these things. But they're on the pre-delegation testing page within the microsite. If you haven't been there, I encourage you to check it out. There's news about pre-delegation testing that's going on up there, and then we are posting all of the resources that you would need to help prepare yourself for pre-delegation testing. So we have the test specifications published there. They're all in draft format right now that were used for the pilot. As I mentioned, we're working to get those updated and finalized. Instructions for data preparation. It's a zip file that also contains not only a narrative, but also templates and examples, and those are being improved and updated. Recently, I believe it was mid last week or so, we published an FAQ document, first version of it, to try and stem some of the questions that are coming in. Please read it. I think it's pretty informative. We certainly recognize there's more questions to be answered in that document, and so we're going to be working to publish more versions as necessary and as we see them come in. On the topic of questions, before you're engaged in the pre-delegation testing process, please route all questions through ICANN. Use the CSC tool as of next week. It'll be Salesforce platform-based, but please encourage you to contact ICANN, not to contact the service provider. The service provider is meant to only be handling questions during active testing. They're not a general PDT help desk situation. So direct your questions to us. We'll get them answered as soon as we possibly can and get you guys thorough answers. We recognize there probably are a lot of questions still out there. And then, as mentioned earlier in the presentation, we published a query by proxy approach document that's an alternative to the DNS testing. So if you're have any concerns about the DNS testing the way it was originally articulated, please review that, and maybe that's an option for you. With that, I think we can open it back up for question and answer if there's great. More.
We've got a couple in the queue, and then we have Jordan. Okay.
This question is from Andy. Regarding searchable whois, what can we do to limit the number of results in the searchable whois? Is there an established threshold, example, the first 20 results? What if someone searches for all domains beginning with A and then B, et cetera? Can we require that a user create an account, then log in for searchable whois? If so, are there policies that specify when we can deny an account?
This is Francisco. The only specification that is out there, the requirement for registries regarding whois searchability is what is in specification 4 in section 1.9. And I recognize that there are not all the answers to the questions that are being asked here. What is there is you go to section 1.9.6 is requiring registries to implement appropriate measures to avoid abuse of this feature. For example, permitting access only to legitimate authorized users. So the question about can you require login to use the searchable whois? Yes, that would be a very good idea to do. Also, the second point is to ensure the feature is in compliance with any applicable privacy laws or policies. I think the answer here is we will expect the individual races to develop the policies that make sense in their context to protect from abuse the searchable whois. Thank you.
Was that it for the queue, Wendy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jordan?
Sure. I mean, I have a number of questions stemming from the demo or the screenshots that you guys just showed. One sort of overriding thought is it would be really, really, really cool and incredibly helpful for a lot of people, I suspect, if instead of having a unique login credential per, I presume when you say contact, you mean per primary contact in TAS?
Oh, no. So an applicant's primary contact can declare a delegate specifically for pre-delegation testing.
So you can have
testing.
One login that gets delegated everything that uses that same backend. Is that correct?
Sure, if you wanted to.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask for, so I'm glad that exists. And I guess related to that, and this may relate to the conversation earlier, but to the extent it's possible to sort of have like a library of documents that you guys store online that you can reuse across multiple testing instances would be super helpful, so we don't have to constantly re-upload the same exact stuff over and over and over again. And then my last question—is this my last question? Oh, so two quick questions. Number one is there a reason? I'm a little bit baffled by the fact that you simultaneously, once you submit data, you can't edit it. But at the same time, if you submit all the data, it doesn't seem like anything happens. It just sits there for a week. Is there a reason why both of those things are true, or am I misunderstanding that the data submission goes for a week and it goes faster if you've submitted everything?
So I think the library question, I think that's something we can look into. We didn't envision the need for it, but certainly something we can look into. The upload is fairly quick, but I recognize it's a lot of clicks still. With regards to the second point, sorry, could you repeat it? I got lost there.
So maybe I'm misunderstanding. If you submit all six sets of documents, does pre-delegation testing start right away, or does it wait till the end of the week, and then that's when the testing begins? Let's start there.
Sure. So you're going to sign up for a testing window, and the testing will begin as soon as your testing window occurs. So we're giving a week or possibly more. We're still looking into do we give more than a week lead time for the data input. But the testing won't occur until your testing window because we have capacity constraints with the service provider.
Right. So that makes perfect sense. I mean, so I understand that. So then I don't understand why once you submit a document, you can't change it if it's just going to sit there in the queue for a week.
Yeah, you can upload it. And
can you re-upload it?
You can upload it, and before you submit it, you can make modifications. So it's a two-part process. You upload, review it, make sure it's what you want,
right, so
and then go ahead and submit.
Okay, even that, I don't know. Why can't I change it? Like, it's just sitting there in the system for several days after I've uploaded it. Why can't I change it?
I could. This is Jacob. I could add to this. Once you submit the data, it's actually transferred from the data entry system into another system. So it's for security reasons, it will not sit out in the outside the testing the inside parameter of the testing system once you have submitted it. So it's basically transferred away. So and you're marked that you're done with it. So
right, but there's no way to, if you realize 3 days later that I've uploaded wrong data, is there a way to submit a new file?
I would use the messaging tool. Let us know what happened.
Okay, so
in
the tool,
tool
doesn't support it, but
and
not a client process.
I think the backend they'd be able to reopen it for you.
Okay.
Try and discourage that behavior if we can.
We have another question.
Maxim Azoba, FATED. What is the procedure following the failure of the test? What happens then?
Sure, good question. We haven't addressed this one yet. So if you fail PDT, you do not fail out of the application process. You'll be contacted to reschedule your test, depending on the severity of the fail. If it was something that looks minor, we might be able to get it reopened right away. We're still looking into what is going to trigger a fail and what that process will look like exactly, but you don't fail out of your application. You'll have an opportunity to retest.
Thanks.
Okay. If there are no other questions, I just want to come back briefly to the change request issue. you have a question?
Follow-up question to Maxime's question. Retesting, is this in 1 year or is it 1 week later, or what is the time frame for this?
So we have capacity that we're reserving with the testing provider, and based on the scheduling that's already occurred, we'll try and get you back into line as soon as we can, but we don't want to bump someone that we certainly wouldn't bump anyone that is ready for testing and it's their first time, and because an application didn't complete testing successfully. So probably have to get back in line, whatever that line is. We do have flexible capacity that we can increase, and we plan to increase from the start. We're going to try and ramp up capacity so that more tests can be in the system at a time.
No, that is not a change request. Let me just address, the idea is that as applications have signed a registry agreement, once you've signed the registry agreement, you will be eligible to schedule a slot for pre-delegation testing. Russ, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you will be given the opportunity to schedule either the next available pre-delegation test slot or the next available slot after a date which you specify. So if you know you're not, you may sign a contract on May 1st, but you know you're not going to be ready for pre-delegation testing until June 1st, you can elect to say, I'm opting in for the next pre-delegation slot available after June 1st. Again, this will be based on priority order applications through the contracting process. Through every phase of the program are processed in priority order. So those slots will then be assigned on a weekly basis based on priority number. Again, if you fail pre-delegation testing, you will then be given an opportunity to reschedule the next round of pre-delegation testing based on what's available. Again, the first available, or after a certain date, again, based on your priority order.
Yeah, Christine, you got that right. There is one thing applicants should be aware of. In the registry agreement, I believe there's a clause about when pre-delegation testing must occur. I think it's a time limit, and I think it's currently 12 months. Is that 12 months from the time you sign a contract to when you enter into pre-delegation testing? So just keep that in mind when you're looking to schedule.
So just to clarify, and I'm getting into lawyer territory, which is not mine, but it kind of says that it's up to delegation. So you have 12 months from effective date of signing until you have requested delegation or something like that. And there is also provision to request an additional 12 months extension to ICANN.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mike.
Hi. How many tests will you do per week?
Right now we have capacity for 20 tests per week, and we have the ability to ramp that up and increase that as required and as we have more applications through the process. We have that ability.
Are you going to revisit the 1,000 per year delegation limit?
IANO, in partnership with NTIA and VeriSign, will definitely be considering that issue. So, just briefly, change requests. Section 1.2.7 of the guidebook, Notice of Changes to Information. I recognize that we need more clarity. ICANN needs to provide more clarity about the types of changes and how we will process those changes and how those changes will be processed prior to conclusion of initial evaluation, at contracting, and beyond. Understanding that once, I think it was Jeff Newman who made the point, once you're in operational registry, these changes wouldn't, ICANN wouldn't be notified of a lot of these changes. But it is called out in the guidebook. So Section 1.27 says that, I'll just read it verbatim. If at any time during the evaluation process information previously submitted by an applicant becomes untrue or inaccurate, the applicant must promptly notify ICANN via submission of the appropriate forms. This includes applicant-specific information, such as changes in financial position and changes in ownership or control of the applicant. I can reserve the right to require a reevaluation of the application in the event of a material change. This could involve additional fees or evaluation in a subsequent application round. Failure to notify ICANN of any change in circumstances that would render any information provided in the application false or misleading may result in denial of the application. So, given this background, I want to acknowledge and state that we need to provide the applicant community more information on how change requests will be processed as we move through, have more applications moving through initial evaluation and contracting. Anthony.
Thank you for reading that. When does the evaluation period end? Because the way I heard what you said is that once that ends, you don't have to submit any change requests or inform ICANN of changes.
So it says if at any time during the evaluation process.
Right. When does that process end?
What would your position be, Anthony?
After initial evaluation.
I think that could be a reading of this. I'm not, again, I'm not a lawyer. You guys know I'm not a lawyer. So I'll let the others at ICANN interpret this. But, yes, if you successfully complete initial evaluation and you're not subject to, you're not seeking, now if you're seeking community priority evaluation, you're still in evaluation. I think that there are other phases of activity and beyond initial evaluation. So I think there needs to be more interpretation of that.
I actually have a way for us to solve all this.
I'm all ears.
Well, apparently Google has submitted applications that pass that are not very specific about all this information that we would need to change. So if Google were interested, you could just let us have your application and we could copy it, and then it would all be very vague and there'd be no problem.
Anyone that would like to use our registry platform is welcome to talk to me about that.
Amadeo, we've got one last question here, and then we've got 2 minutes, so we'll take Amadeo's question.
It's not a question, it's a request, Christine. And you said that you need to provide more clarity on the change request process. No, you need to provide more clarity on what is a material change, because some of the examples we provide are, you know, were voluntarily trivial, like, you know, adding a new IP address somewhere which doesn't affect anything materially. So if you prefer having obsolete technology because, you know, my computer broken and Apple doesn't make it anymore and have a better model with more RAM, but I couldn't, because then, you know, I'd be violating the my application as I describe it, and I should have to file a change request. When other people are changing from exclusive use TLDs to open and nothing happens, are changing even the string because they said there was a typo and nothing happens, and ICANN staff has changed everything in the guidebook a several number of times, like when CPA happens, when the objections have to be filed, for good reasons. I seriously ask you to have a dose of realism on what's material. It's not lying to you. It's saying, you know, evolution exists. And sometimes there are some times for improve things. We are not saying, I mean, for instance, the example I gave you, we added something, but you have the same. Do you want the truth? Or do you want the material thing that we describe it that's, you know, not as good 1 year ago? And we passed. We can lie to you if you prefer. Apparently you prefer that.
Clearly, I don't think that that is the case. Based on the guidebook, it's very clear that any changes, ICANN should be notified of any changes. I will take an action to provide clarity on how different types of changes will be handled through the evaluation process. I'll turn it back to Russ as we conclude.
Okay, so I think that is the conclusion of the pre-delegation testing session. I appreciate your attendance, and if you have any more questions, I'll be around for a few minutes as well as through the rest of the week. And then certainly questions, please send them through the ICANN CSC, the new GTLD Customer Service Center, and we'll get them answered as quickly as we possibly can. Thank you very much.